Hi guys, welcome back to another episode on the HYM podcast. As you can see, we've got a special person back today. I was going to say guest then, but he's actually a host of the show as well. It's just been a while.
Sometimes host, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Co-host, mate. How you been?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad, mate. I've just been coming back from Mexico, actually, with FE.
Of course.
So I've managed, right, 6 hours time difference. I managed to be jet lagged going out there, obviously, get on the time zone the night before I'm coming back. So now I'm jet lagged again.
It's typical, isn't it? And then the sleep pattern's completely screwed for those couple of days doing the sign. You're just tired the whole time. But it's what it is.
I've been on the sim today and I woke up absolutely shattered and then finished the day like feeling like I could go for another few hours.
Buzzing, yeah. Just need those espressos, don't you?
Yeah. So what about you? What about you been up to anyway? Tell the people.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I can't even remember last time I was on. So obviously I've been pretty busy out in Germany. Been there. I think I was home 7 days since April the 10th. And now I'm back again just from Spa. Previously to that was Red Bull Ring GT Masters. And previous to that was the Nürburgring 24 Hours. So, yeah, been pretty busy and been going all right.
It's been pretty successful, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, in a way, in terms of pace has been good. So we were on pole at the 24, which was good. Obviously, pretty wild conditions. So to get the pole there, I was very happy with. Unfortunately, we retired because of a technical issue in the race, but it is what it is. You can't win it every year. And then in Red Bull Ring, again, I was on pole there and we had a damper failure whilst leading. So that was one of those things again. Sometimes it just bites you in the ass and you can't do anything about it. And then we finished third on the Sunday. And then last night or this early hours this morning, I got back from the Spa 24-hour test where we debuted our new BMW M4 GT3 baby. At the SRO event, which again
went top it as well.
Yeah. Obviously, to be fastest overall is very nice. We'll see how it develops. It's actually racing. It's got its first race this weekend in the hands of Jens Klingman and Sheldon van der Linde at the Nordschleife. So obviously, all eyes will be on that. And yeah, after driving it the last few days, I'm pretty sure it'll be okay.
You're not looking forward to going back to the M6 then?
Well, yeah, it depends. We've got Zandvoort next week and the week after. So it's high speed. The M6 tends to be quite all right then. We could probably maximise our chances there. The difference in performance with the M4 to the M6 is massive. So very much looking forward to getting my ass in the seat next year and being sending that around instead.
Yeah, well, our guest today actually has just had his first, well, not his first taste, but he's currently having his first taste of GT machinery this year. He is F2 race winner, DTM race winner nowadays, F3 race winner, Toyota champion, Formula 4 race winner,
done a bit,
European Spanish F3 Open winner.
Done your research, man.
I'm just a big fan. Red Bull Junior, where do I end?
Keep going and going.
Liam Lawson, there he is, already speaking. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, man. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, whereabouts are you?
I am based in the UK in Milton Keynes. So, currently living in MK.
So, you on the sim much there, I guess, Red Bull quite a bit?
I don't do so much of the F1 stuff yet. Yuri does more of the F1 sim. So, he's in there quite a lot. But we have the like junior sim that we use before every race weekend. So, that's normally like how many rounds we got? Nine rounds. So, we got eight, nine times during the year.
Yeah, well, that's something we've touched on with a few of the other guys because we are, I mean, everyone listening has probably watched the other episodes, and we are getting through the F2 grid quite quickly here with guests. We've touched on it with a few other people about the weekend format, obviously, this year and season format in that case as well. So it's gone down from, 12 races to 9 weekends, something like that, 3 races a weekend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's your first season in F2, so you don't have anything to compare it to, I guess. But I guess with F3 last year, how is that kind of, do you like it or is it a bit of a hindrance?
It's better on the race weekend because you get more time in the car. Because that's one of the things that, like last year with F3, as you know, like you get the one quali, the one practice, the one quali, and then 2 races and a lot of time sitting around. So it's nice with the extra session, but I don't know, the format, it helped me. in Bahrain, and it also hurt me in other places, like in Baku. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with it at the moment. I think it definitely rewards less qualifying because you can sort of make up the reverse grid races, but it's also really bad. If you have a bad quali, you're like three races going to be starting at the back of the grid most likely. So unless you're at a track that you can pass, but I'm kind of on the fence with it.
Yeah, I mean, if I sort of, because I can say I'm a fan of it now, watching it as a fan now, it's, I don't know, I get the feeling that it's, there's a little bit less risk being taken in the first two races. I'm not sure if that's how it feels to you guys in the car, but watching on TV, I don't know, it just seemed to be for the feature race coming first in previous years. Maybe there was, obviously you didn't want a DNF in that race, but especially in the sprint race the following Sunday, there was a lot more risk.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think the first two races, like the mindset's always just trying to survive them and get to the feature race with like a decent stack of points already, because there's quite a lot available. So yeah, maybe, I mean, for me, I haven't really, I think Monaco, you couldn't pass anyway. And Baku, I was actually trying to take no risk at all. But I obviously got put in the wall there. So I don't know. I think from my side anyway, I haven't thought too differently with it. I think it's about like trying to survive and get as many points as possible before the feature race.
Yeah, well, you say you can't overtake in Monaco, but you managed it.
It was weird.
Yeah, yeah, still, well, mate, it's pretty impressive to overtake around there, having raced the track quite a few times myself, to be able to pass that there, wet or dry, in one of those cars, because people don't understand how wide and long the F2 car is in general, and how narrow Monaco is.
Yeah,
it's pretty decent to pass still.
When I first drove, it's like when I first drove in my car, when I first drove out on track, I was just like, there's no way you can push a car like on the limit around a track like this. It just doesn't make sense. It is so much tighter and smaller than what you see on TV, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's always the fast laps. So when you're just brushing or kissing the barriers the whole way through, and it's, I love the place, Monaco, myself as well.
You
it's
drove it in a Porsche.
Yeah, I drove it in 3.5 Renault 2012. I got a
That would have been... That would have been cool.
I think it was a battle between Bird and Bianchi at the front, and they'd done it in GP2, and man, they were so fast. They were super fast. So they were first and second. I think Rossi was third. Then I think I was fifth or something like that, first time there. But physically, I was done.
Yeah.
Because it was Michelin tires. Every lap was like 21s or 22s. Every lap. And yeah, it was mega.
That's so nice.
And then GP2, so nice. I did it 15. Actually, Richie Sanaway, who we'd spoke about before, before we came on, won the sprint race. And then I did it in Porsches in 2018 as well.
Was that when Richie won the sprint race?
Yes, Richie won in
2018. Yeah, because so that day, I had my entry from go-karts to cars. I did a scholarship in a Formula V. Or Formula First. Oh, and mate,
I was in GP2. Oh god, I'm
But that like day, I rocked up for the finals day. They we went from 20 candidates down to the top six for the finalists for the Sunday. And I woke up on the Sunday, and when I arrived at the track, there's a photo that had just been printed of Richie on the podium. It just won overnight. Yeah. In Monaco. And I remember being oh, that's so cool, Monaco and stuff like that. That's why it was a big deal to me as well to win that race, obviously. And then pretty gutting to get it taken away.
I know what happened. I think most people would know what happened, but would you mind kind of explaining what happened, basically?
So as you guys know, but the we have a set throttle map that originally was formed to help the cars that were stalling, because these cars in F3, most people are full throttle, but in F2, there's too much power to be full throttle. So we're quite limited with that. So they made a throttle map that was really quite aggressive, just to help the cars from stalling. And it's a fixed thing that you have to run. So I think for all the cars, it's throttle map 1, and then we just changed to throttle map 2. So when you do the launch, until you've reached 50 kilometers an hour, I think, then you can change to throttle map 2, and then you just do the rest of the race like that. So it was wet, obviously. And I always stay, normally I do the formation lap and throttle map 1, because it only affects first gear, but Monaco's got so many first gear corners that I went back to map 2 on the formation lap. And then when I was rolling up to the grids, I normally wait for the call on the radio from my engineer to, you know, tell me how many burnouts, throttle map, engine map, like clutch map and stuff like that. And I just forgot. I didn't get the call, and then I forgot about it, and I pulled up on the grids. And literally, as soon as I put my foot on the throttle, to basically do the start, the RPM just came up so slowly, and I was like, "What's going on?" And as soon as we launched, I mean, I got a worse start because of it in the end. Like, I got a terrible start, and I went to change the throttle map too, and I went to map three, and I was like, "Oh my God!" You know, I realized straight away. Like, I thought to myself, "That's disqualification, right?" And I decided to just forget about it and basically push flat out for the rest of the race and see what happens. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty crappy thing to get disqualified by as well, because the guys that are disqualifying you have never sat on the grid, and the pressure at Monaco and the adrenaline and the nerves, you're not thinking about throttle maps. So if you're not, if you're not
I know.
reminded, you're gonna forget.
It's
It's
rules are rules, and I accept that completely, but it was
yeah.
one of the definitely so far that's the hardest thing I've ever had to accept after that. Never been anything through anything like that, that's for sure.
I mean, I've not even driven Monaco, so to even think about winning there, yeah, that's got to be pretty. I mean, I suppose at least the only thing I can wrap my head around is that you kind of knew straight away. So there's nothing, because you know what I mean. There's nothing worse than like winning the race, going through the celebrations, like you're just on top of the world, and
I did. I forgot though. Like I forgot
then.
about it at the start, and I did the rest of the race, and I like won the race, and I was like, yeah. And I was out of the car. I was super happy, and I was thinking to myself, I'm pretty sure I started in the wrong throttle map when we were in the interview. There's like a photo that F2 posted when they announced it, and it's me in the interview just like looking really confused and thinking. And I'm pretty sure that's the moment that I realized and I remembered that I started in the wrong. And the wrong map. But for me, that was, I mean, like I said, Richie won that race, the sprint race, 5 6 years ago, when I was, and I remember it just being really, really cool to me. So for me, it was a really big deal. I mean, everyone wants to win at Monaco anyway, but it was definitely extra special. So yeah, pretty gutting.
Yeah, you can take away from it though that you weren't on track. At the end of the day, you got a worse start, like you say. So at least you know you can do it. And then if you get the chance again, you just got to go and do the repeat, haven't you?
Just hope we get that chance again. Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
you'll be all right.
I think for the people that sort of look out for your career, we'll only look at that race as a
Yeah.
positive.
Yeah, for
Yeah, I
sure.
hope so. I hope so. For
I
sure.
mean, pretty much the rest of the, not the whole season, but I mean, you've pretty much had a positive season so far, haven't you? I mean, you've come away into first race of the year, I think, and won your first race.
Yeah, the speed's been really good all year, like straight away. We knew pre-season testing was good. I think we have a strong lineup as well. Like Yuri as a teammate he's more experienced than me, and he's quick. He's got more experience in these bigger cars, so it's quite good having a fast teammate like that. But for sure, the speed's been really, really good. We've just been missing every weekend, just trying to put the complete weekend together. We need a solid weekend to go through. And I thought Baku was going to be that, to be honest, with the pole. But yeah, obviously in the end that didn't turn out to be it either. So we need to get on top of that.
Yeah, because you guys are pretty quick, weren't you? I think you were 1-2 in qualifying Baku.
Yeah, so I mean, in FP, I was like 1.6 seconds off Yuri in FP, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so slow. And I don't know, in quali, it's the same. I had this a couple of years ago when I did Macau for the first time, and everyone was saying to me before the weekend, don't crash in FP, you know, make the most of track time. I'm sure you've been told this as well, like
Oh,
just
mate.
get through it. And I did all of FP in Macau and basically never went on the limit. And I got to quali and I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like I haven't pushed the push the track properly yet. And I kind of had that in Baku a little bit. The practice wasn't on the limit. So I went to quali with just a mindset of, I don't care if I crash a car, I just need to fire it in everywhere. And it made such a difference.
Yeah, it does. My engineers always said to me, the last two laps are the ones you push in practice. So you just build up and circulate, get the laps, figure out where everything is, and then two laps, then yeah. Obviously, you've got
Don't
to figure
crash it,
out when
crash it.
quali is, but if you shunt, then it's not the end of the world. At least you've got your laps in. But if you
Yes.
do it on lap two or three in Monaco, then forget it,
Yeah.
your weekend's over.
I imagine it's quite a funny one though, because I've done Nürburgring, Pau, and Macau quite a few times each one, but none of them on an F3, F2 weekend, basically. So I've always had practice to like build up to it and stuff. Like I remember doing Macau for the first time. My engineer, Lane, who's I think he's now Nick Cassidy's engineer actually in Virgin. Formula E, and he was just on me the whole prep. You do not crash in free practice one. Do not crash in free practice one. Yeah. I did the whole thing just like cruising, and at some point I was P6 with like two laps to go, and I thought, wow, I'm just a hero. I'm not even trying. and then decided to push last lap, and I came so close to one of the biggest crashes I've ever had. Second to last corner, the last lap of free practice one, and I wouldn't say it shit me up, but it was just like, well, you don't do that again. So in Q1 I was nowhere after that. And I can only imagine on an F3 F2 weekend, you only have free practice. You don't have two qualies or two free practices like you have in Macau and stuff. That's got to be pretty, because you can't exactly build up to it as comfortably as you would like.
No, and one of the hardest things is going from, like in Baku, we went from medium to super soft in quali, and so we only drove the medium in free practice, and then you go straight to a super soft where you got to just know how, because the first lap, maybe second push lap, but you just have to know where to push everything and step everything up. And I think that's one of the biggest things. When I first drove on Pirellis, that was the hardest thing I had to learn. On other tires you can do lap after lap after lap and sort of build up, and then your fourth lap you put it out there, but with the Pirelli, you just got to get straight on it. And over the lap, the balance is changing as well with the tire going away. So it's definitely a unique situation.
Do you think, like, on a street track though, going like two steps softer for quali sort of all of a sudden gives you this like confidence? Because it's not the same comparison, but I did one F2 race in Sochi last year, and we did, we're mediums to ultra soft, I think it was. Well, like purple, that's all I know.
I think it's super soft. Yeah.
Is it? Oh, right,
I think it is. Wow, if it is.
And I remember feeling like I was absolutely nowhere in free practice on mediums. Just like I couldn't, the turbo of the car, the lag, the weight of it, the 18-inch wheels, whatever. And then put the super soft on quali, and I was P9 on the first run.
Yeah.
And I thought, I could be on pole. Like, I don't know. I just got all this confidence out.
Yeah,
no one ends screwed the second run, obviously, but we won't talk about that. but yeah, do you think that's maybe helped you?
For me, at least it did, because I went from being absolutely nowhere to the first lap in quali, P2 or something, P2 or P4, from nowhere. And as soon as I got the call, I think it was second. Yeah, it was P2. As soon as I got the call, you're P2. That was everything I needed to be like, now I can do it. I know I can do this. The rest of the quali, I know that we're fast enough. And it gave me so much confidence just nailing the first lap. But I think you're right. Going to making that jump on the compound gives you so much more grip that you just have so much more confidence.
Yeah, it's better that way around than the other, isn't it? When you feel like you've done the best lap of your life and your engineer goes, you P12.
So. Yeah, mate.
Only P12. I've done some and I've been like P28, mate. Yeah.
Oh, no.
So you're with High Tech this year.
High Tech this year. Second year with High Tech. I did F3 with the team last year. Completely new group of guys, which is it's cool to work with new people, and they're really, really on it, which is good. Really happy with the team side of things, with where we are. Pretty happy with it.
It seems like they are on it. Who are the engineers there? Because I think I might know one of them, but I just don't want to say the wrong name.
Okay, there's Jan.
I'll put him on the spot.
I was gonna ask you and just say it, but Gav's like chief engineer. Gav's still there.
He's the man.
I've heard that Gav's like really on it.
He's super on it. He ran me so he was iSport back in GP2 days. So they've been in GP2 for forever. And then himself and a guy called Richard Selwyn, they came to World Series at the end of my first year in 2012. And actually after that, they both live in Norfolk, and they Richard Selwyn, who is Gav's partner, basically, he saved my career when he took me to Carrera Cup out of single seaters, and he engineered me there. So I have quite a strong connection with those two guys. And I know running a car, there's not many people better than those two guys as a combo. So I'm not surprised. The car's nice to drive.
But Gav is really good. Like, really... he's always he sits next to me, so I have my engineer, I got Alan, and Yuri's got Jan, and then Gav sits over here next to me and he's always like working away. And I like occasionally like look over and he's just like doing stuff. I mean, I'm looking at it, I have no idea what he's doing,
nah.
but he's doing something and it looks complicated. So,
yeah, I know they've got super clever like simulation programs and all with strategy and everything. He's bang on it most of the time, if not all the time. So, happy days.
I was actually, Jan was my engineer in Formula Renault.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he ran me in 2015 in Eurocup. But he actually, I mean, the car that they, he used to work for Corrin and GP. So they won, they were like, it was them and Joseph Kerrickman were like the main two teams in Formula Renault for a few years. And they, but they had this quite renowned car setup where the car was heavily on the nose and quite unstable to drive. And I didn't really know it then, but I found out I liked driving with a pointy car, but Jan kind of taught me how to drive it.
Yeah.
In a roundabout way, like especially like overlapping and holding throttle and the braking and think changing the balance with the pedals and things like that, and especially in high speed corners. But yeah, I always speak to Jan when I see him in the paddock because it's sort of like one of those guys you look back on and think, well, yeah, like Nick with Gav, like you really helped me type thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so my engineer, Alan, was, I think he was chief engineer at Racing Engineering, I think, a couple of years ago. And it's like the first time when I came to F2 and did the first testing, where he's like looking at, like, you know, you know, it's good when an engineer looks at the data and can tell you exactly what the car is doing without you even saying anything, pretty much. Like you can see what the car, like you can see when the car's on the nose or on the, before he even looks at like overall balance and stuff like that. And he was, like I mean, just an overload of information for me to learn in the first test. And it was, a big eye opener. That's for sure. You know, when you think, you know, every year you go into a new category, you think, you know, like you're like, yeah, I think I'm ready. For everything, and then you just learn so much new stuff. It's really cool.
Do you know what wine, not wine's good, because this is a bit, because that's a bit exaggerating, but you know when an engineer, you sort of like say you got understeer in the car and you purposely don't want to make it worse, you might be on your quali lap or something, and you go into the limit of the front tire, no further than that. But on the data, it doesn't show up as massive chronic understeer. And you're like, I've got understeer 4 out of 5, mate. Help me. And it's just going, I don't see understeer.
Oh my God.
That's because I'm having to drive around it, mate. Like, help me.
I've gone through that so much. You have no idea how much. Oh, my God, yes. And you know, obviously, if the car's understeer, you're not just going to wind a whole bunch of lock into it. And like, the car's understeer. You know, you can feel it.
Yeah, it's so funny. But that's why you need trust in each other. Because you need to be able to trust them, and that well, to be honest, that's when they say stuff like that kind of throws the trust out the window.
I used to have an engineer that when I first learned everything, it was like he used to tell me when the car was understeering, I still remember it so clearly. The car had like this, and it's an F4, had a lot of understeer. He said to me to just turn more and and just keep winding lock into it. So I'm like driving around,
the old lorry,
like,
get the old lorry.
So much lock.
That'll make it worse. That'll make it better, won't it? it's lower levels. I kind of understand it a little bit, to be honest. Why, you know, engineers like that are down there. But I mean, I'm not innocent, I suppose. So I better shut my mouth a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I just want to touch, because I drove for High Tech in 2017 as well. So I did Formula 3 with Ollie and that, and it was a completely different team back then. I mean, I had Christopher, I think, still in the F3 team. So he ran me in the second half of that year. But yeah, I had a really good year at High Tech. We finished fifth that year, and I look back at it fondly. Ollie's a top bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's really cool. Really cool.
To do what he's done in his career, I mean, he's obviously... many people might not know, actually, but might know he runs High Tech. Ollie Oakes, the boss of High Tech, that he was actually karting world champion and a Red Bull Junior as well.
Exactly
right, because I'm going to make Ollie feel old now. When I was looking to go to cars, I went to Donington and he was a Red Bull Junior at the time, and I was just starting my karting career. So he's already world champ, and he was a Rebel Junior at Donington racing there against all sorts. I think Bottas and Ricciardo around that time, maybe a little bit before.
Yeah, because he's like 3 or 4 years older than you, I think.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. I, do,
he's
I don't
like
actually
33 know. Or something like that.
33. Okay.
But yeah. I might be selling him short there. but yeah, he's a top bloke, like one of the best team bosses I've had.
Yeah, he's cool. Really, really cool. And then, and like I mean, with Christoph as well last year in F3, I've never had, I mean, he cuts it so close on everything, on weight, on like, it is always like 0.000 every single time. Everything's on the margin.
Mate, you've got to ask him about last qualifying of F3 of the season 2017, right? I can't remember where we finished. We were only fourth or something like that. Four, but we were P nowhere until the last lap. And I could not get a lap. I just kept on getting blocked. And last lap, he goes, dry, just finished. I was on a good lap after one or two sectors or something, but we were supposed to box. Like that was it. We ran out of fuel otherwise. Yeah. And he said, just cross the line because otherwise we were P17 or something like that. And I pulled over exit turn one in Hockenheim on the inside. I should have, he said, we're going to get DQ'd. Like we're going to be underweight. We're going to be out of fuel. The exhaust had broken or something like that. We should have been DQ'd on four different, for stopping after the line, you weren't allowed to do that. And somehow we got through. Somehow they passed
really?
Us and we started the race like fifth, fourth, whatever. But yeah, I know what you mean. He cuts everything on. I've never always met any bloke who does it any better than that.
Yeah, he was really good like that. That was definitely one thing. Like every morning, weigh yourself before every single time you even stand in the car. You got to weigh yourself, and it's to the absolute 0.0 all the time.
I mean, makes sense.
That's how it should be, really. I guess. I mean, you've got to cut it fine because I'm sure other people maybe not so fine, but yeah, I think you've got to do that because it's all small margins.
We never got DQ'd, so. It was never too much, but it was always definitely on the limit. So he's good at that.
Yeah, he definitely is good at that. Let's just touch on, obviously, the fact that I think a bit surprisingly, at least it was to me this year when I saw you entered to do DTM. So how did that come about? Because I think it's a bit of a bucking the trend kind of thing, isn't it, really? For like a junior driver, top of his game, you know, Red Bull F1 backed to go and do a GT championship. Effectively. I know DTM has been, you know, top level touring car championship for years, but it's a GT category now.
Oh, mate, I was just as surprised. Honestly, I didn't see it coming at all. I was like, I was getting ready for my F2 season. I was big. This is the year, you know, you got to nail it. And out of nowhere, I went, it was last year. So F2 had been confirmed, not officially, but it had been confirmed. We knew it was happening. I'd just come home from the Bahrain end of season test. I was in quarantine in New Zealand in a hotel. And I got a call from my manager, and he was like, I'm speaking to Dr. Marco in about 10 minutes. And we were like, I mean, we were like trying to work out what it was going to be about. We were freaking out. Like, what have we not done? Yeah, exactly. Like, because I'm sitting in quarantine. I was like, was I meant to go and see somebody? Was I meant to do something? And then there was this training camp that was going to happen mid-January, but COVID was too bad, so it didn't end up going ahead. But and then we thought, oh my god, it might be about that. Like I haven't booked flights or stuff. And then we were like, okay, we can't figure it out, so just have the phone call and see what happens. And he called me back like an hour later, and he's like, well, you're doing DTM this year. And I was like, what? I was
Did
so
you think
confused.
He was getting rid of the F2 to do that?
At first, I was like, first thing I said was, you know, we're stopping F2, right? And he's like, no, it's just a side program to do because, I guess Red Bull needed a driver for it. You know, they're putting a lot into DTM. Obviously it's a huge championship, one that I really realized over the weekend just how big it is. And to them, it was, they needed a driver for it. And why they picked me, I have no idea. But yeah, it was definitely a big surprise for me.
I mean, I would take it as a compliment, obviously, the fact that they're willing to pay you to do a championship like DTM. But yeah. I mean, like the fact that they're, you know, willing to put you a single seater driver, hadn't driven a GT car, I don't think, before, and put you up against that level of competition. Like it's as Red Bull do, it's a bit of a sink or swim situation, isn't it? But
Yeah.
I mean, I think and the fact that you've gone into your first race weekend and finished first and second, I mean, you're pretty high up in the list right now, I would imagine.
It's just, it is. It's just like, part of me is like, you know, this year is, I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity, and you know, I'm all for it. It's just part of me this year is so important. You know, it's the F2s. F2s the well, firstly, very expensive, so you don't get a lot of years in it if more than one. And it's kind of the year that I need to. This is the year I got to nail it. You know, to make F1, it's a really big deal. So, in a way, at the start, I was quite nervous with when we were doing testing for DTM because I was going back between the cars. And when we had the Barcelona, the last preseason test we had, and I'd just driven DTM. I just had a test in Hockenheim or Lausitzring, and I started and I was like 1.8 seconds off my first push in F2, and I was just like so angry. I couldn't. Yeah. I was 18 sector one, 16 sector two, and I was just like, "This is stupid. I can't." You know, and it, now it's got better, but it's definitely a quite a big step going between the cars, and it's definitely gone in my mind. You know, I don't want it to take away from F2 at all because I need to nail this year. You know,
I get that completely. When I first went to Carrera Cup, I was doing a lot, like I still am, of the F1 sim work. And obviously in the Carrera Cup, you've got no ABS, no traction control, no downforce whatsoever. And I was doing 3 days a week on the sim and then jumping in between the two. And my first year I found really quite tricky. Yeah. And then the second year I was like, okay, now I understand you have to have two completely different brains and then you can get on with it. But I was already done my single seater career, so to speak. So not quite in a similar position, but I know what you mean with the driving styles. It's
so different.
Very, very
so,
different.
So different.
Yeah. Very, very different. And how are you enjoying it? Obviously I know all the guys that you're racing with. So first of all, respect for going out and winning the race.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm finding it's good. It's good so far. Like you say, so, so different. But it's been good so far. It's really like, the race that I won, I had the aircon didn't work. I know I probably sound like a pussy for saying that, but you kind of need it in a way,
warm,
especially when it was like 30, it was like 35 degrees at Monza, and you normally drive with it on. It's a normal thing to drive these cars with the aircon.
Yes,
at least having the fan. So mine was switched off and I didn't know. And it was my first race. So I'm thinking, holy, like this is seriously hot. halfway through, and I had my little window closed as well, and I was determined not to open this little window, but I was like, for drag. But I was like really not in a good way. The last five laps I was dizzy. I was like and I got out of the car afterwards, and I mean I looked terrible. I looked like I just run an Ironman. And the other two guys up there with me, Abril and Gotts, they were like, it looked all right. And I was like, how do you do this for longer than an hour? And they were like, yeah, normally do double stints and stuff like that. And they were kind of looking at me like, you should be fit enough for this. And I was like, man, this is crazy hot. And then I found out the aircon wasn't working. And day two, we had it on. And man, it makes such a difference.
Obviously, being in the GT Championship, BOP is going to come into it a little bit. And obviously, someone like you dealing with in single seaters where it's all about, you know, the best you can be with you and your team and trying to look good to Red Bull, obviously, and trying to get a seat in F1. Hopefully BOP doesn't come in that like affect it too much in terms of you doing well. But if the reason for you being in DTM is obviously to make an impact and show what you can do with Red Bull in a different car in a different series, you don't want that to come into it, do you really?
No, it's something that's so super new for me. Like in testing, it's just every team's just sandbagging and mucking around. And I mean, I was given like 8 tenths a lap in some tests, 8 tenths a lap, like just driving around really slowly just to not put the lap time up, and everybody else is doing the same thing. It's really big, the BOP, and it changes a lot. Like we went from day one, it's kind of stupid because we qualified. I mean, my lap in quali was probably the best over the whole weekends. It was really, really good. And it was only good enough for P7, and Mercedes were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then there was a Lambo. Lambo hadn't done any of the preseason testing, the official test, or any of the BOP sessions. They just rocked up for the first round. So we were all like, how have they worked out their BOP? And for quali one, we were P7. And then in the race, they tried to bring everybody closer to Mercedes. And we got a bit more horsepower, not a huge amount, but it was only a little bit more, and it definitely helped. But still in the races, I remember in a straight line, I was just dead even with the Mercedes guys, but we only got them in the pit stop. Like I basically had good speed, but everyone was quite bunched up at the start. And then we boxed early and had a really fast stop. Like, my team is seriously good at pit stops and DTM. We made up like 3 seconds. And then I came out and I was on fresh tires. So I did two laps. Mercedes waited a little bit and I came out and had the lead. But it's not like we pulled away from the field and dominated, you know. We were 2 seconds gap pretty much the whole race, 2 or 3 seconds. And I was not, you know, I wasn't flat out, but I wasn't saving a lot, for example. Like, the tires were going away and we won the race and they were like, Ferrari, you are way too fast. Let's add 30 kilos for Sunday. And then the 30 for quali, it wasn't actually that bad. Like, I still had a really nice lap and put on a P2. But then in the race, I had the success ballast from winning, so another 25 kilos. So I had 55 more kilos in the car from Saturday to Sunday. And, mate, I was just like dog slow in the race. I was yeah. getting you know when there's a slow guy in front of you and you're just trying to clear them as quickly as possible to not let the leader get. I was that slow guy. And people were just lunging me from like 50 meters back and hitting my door. And I felt like I was invisible for the first three laps until I ended up spinning around. But yeah, BOP is definitely something that is new, and every team has got their own way of trying to get around it in the best way possible. But there's going to be a lot of change. You know, BMW went from qualifying for 14th to qualifying third. From Saturday to Sunday as well. So
yeah, and also because it's a new championship, they haven't taken the SRO's platform of BOP because they were doing their own thing with the DTM and they're making the cars faster. I'm sure the first half a year will be them feeling it out on what type of circuit, which car is going to be better, because obviously the Ferrari is going to be better tire wear than most because of its short wheelbase, and usually it's a lighter car. But then who can extract the most amount of power? From my reckoning, it's probably Mercedes, in terms of actually how far they can turn it up. The M6 will be definitely good at some
they
circuits,
so fast in a straight line. Yeah. Like the BMW is, and the Lambo, like in the Sunday race, I was behind one of the Lambos. It's the I'm not sure, I don't know what her name is. It's probably really bad of me. No, it's a guy,
Esme,
She was. In front of me and like every time we got to the straight, she just pulled like three car lengths on me, and it took me so long to get past. It was really really difficult. And the BMW is the same. Any time you get behind them, it's like a known thing now, apparently, that when you get behind a BMW, you can't overtake them because they're straight line. And you can see the differences with the different manufacturers, like where the cars are good and where they're bad. For example, with Audi, I basically pulled out of I can't remember who it was on Nico Müller. I like pulled out of turn two, crossed over, and pretty much cleared him. Like, I was like, wow, we got some power on the Audis. And then about 100 meters later, he just hauls up next to me and clears me before the next corner. And so, like, even in a straight line, the differences between like the out of the exit of the corner and then like top end speed as well,
it's a different torque ranges, they're mapping them all with the different BOP. It's very You kind of learn, okay, this car is going to be fast here at this point of the straight, and then you know whether to bother covering. Obviously, you've done one race in the GT or DTM style format, but you'll get quite fast where or who is fast at one position, and then you'll be able to make even better decisions. To not that you've made bad decisions, but obviously you've won a race already in DTM. That's one more race than I have, so pretty good.
I actually hadn't realized the other day until I asked the question why Porsche weren't doing DTM. And it's because they can't get enough power out of it, I heard.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they run maximum. I think they can run 530 horsepower. And I know I don't know exact numbers for the other manufacturers, but that isn't particularly high. So then when their DTM have decided that they can run as much power as possible for the cars, or as close to as possible, then although the Porsche, I'm sure, is a fantastic car around the corners, you're just hemorrhaging so much speed in the straight line, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and in the end, we're actually running really low to bring everybody closer. We're not running anywhere near as high as we could, but I guess before the season, that was like probably too much of a risk.
Yeah. Someone I want to ask as well is, obviously your teammates of Alex, this year. So how I know this is you're the guest, but how is his feeling, you know, coming out of an F1 car to jumping into a GT car?
Yeah, I mean, for both of us, it's it feels pretty horrible to drive. But because it's single seater, you know, it's a great car. And one thing that I noticed is that you notice that you're in a really, you know, nice, well-made supercar with the gear shifts, with everything. The way it feels is so much nicer, more refined than an F2 car, for example. But he's really, like, his feedback and his technical mind, the way he feels the car, is quite good. Coming from F1, like, it's really interesting for me to learn and sort of see the knowledge that he gets from the car every time he drives it. But he had some brake issues on the weekends, so he was struggling with like efficiency in the braking, and that's why he was struggling with the car. But otherwise, I think he doesn't mind it too much.
Yeah, I can only guess, but if I reckon there's probably going to be some like comparisons drawn between the two of you, I would imagine, through the year, from above, I would guess.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know how can you say. Well, depends on what it's for. If it's for example, if it's for single seaters, you know, if it's for F1. Or yeah. how can you judge two guys in a GT car? Because I have thought about that as well, but I don't know. Or it's for future GT drives and Red Bull, depending on what their plans are. But yeah. I'm not too sure. I think we're completely different points, obviously. So hasn't felt like competition. Same with Yuri, actually. First Red Bull driver teammate I've had it doesn't feel like you're at each other's throats the whole time. Yeah. As you know, guys who are aiming for the same thing and have to kind of beat each other for the same thing, you know.
Yeah, well, that in the end, that only helps both of you.
Yeah, so much better.
Yeah,
and it gets more and more like that actually when you come over to the GT world, or in general, you can see the relationship or the working relationship between Perez and Verstappen this year actually is really quite good, and it's for sure helping the team move forward in general. So you can see when all the guys are working in unison, it definitely, definitely helps. But back to the comparisons, they won't be making a comparison on driver skill for a single seater for sure. But what it has done for both of you is, look, there's only 20 whatever seats in Formula One. Even if you weren't to get a drive over there, and it's something that everyone has to think about at some point in the career, you've already showed in your first race weekend that you're a GT or a DTM race winner. So you've got a career there already, which is perfect and can make you relax and actually probably help you in your Formula 2 career, because you know it's not like you're going to stop at any point.
It's a good
point. Yeah. It is.
It's not something that I'm older, so I've done it all in terms of that and falling back from single seaters. But it's not something you'll think of at your age when you've only got one goal, which I completely understand.
Yeah.
But actually, if someone tells you that and you think, oh, actually, it's not going to be that bad.
I can earn
a really good living if I don't happen to make the dream, which is, you may well go on and be a Formula One world champion in a few years. We don't know. But you've already proved yourself in the world to all these manufacturers. So it's only another, you know, tying the bow.
Yeah, it's really true. It is really, really true. Yeah.
Instead of F1 or bust, it's like F1 or, you know, professional career.
Yeah. Kind of, although it feels like F1 or bust, I'm not going to lie. You know,
you need to keep telling yourself, particularly now, it's F1 or bust, because it will make you obviously strive towards the top.
Yeah. At least there is a, you know, good chance that if that doesn't happen, that there is, you know, a seat elsewhere for me.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, I'm not taking or I'm not trying to tell you that or think about something different. But at my stage in when I was in single seaters or the same stage, I wish I had had something to fall back on, because then when it did fall away, actually, I thought I'm completely screwed and I'm going to quit and that's it. But I didn't. So having that opportunity is only a good thing. So it's pretty cool.
I can put my what's the phrase? Throw my hat in the ring with that one, because I mean, honestly, mate, like you're gonna go to F1. You're good enough to go to F1. You're good enough to be an F1 world champion. We all think that, and we all probably know we can do that at some level. Me, in my case, I was racing F3 to get a professional career elsewhere. And now I'm trying to get into GTs and Formula E and things like that. And you wouldn't believe, like, I've won races everywhere I've been. I've only won a championship in F4, but I've won races everywhere else. And you would not believe that Nick would have been the same, I'm pretty sure, at the time until he'd done Porsche and things like this. They don't care. Like, they want to say that you ask them, okay, can I have a drive in Spa 24? Can I have a drive in Nürburgring 24? Can I go and do GT World Challenge or whatever? And they say, what experience have you got? Oh, none. Well, I've won races everywhere else. And it's like, well, yeah, but are you quick in a GT car? Well, of course yeah. I am. And that's what I'm finding at the moment.
Really?
And it looks like, yeah, honestly, mate, you wouldn't believe it until it happens. That's what I've been surprised at, because I thought I'd just walk into a seat.
Yeah.
It's really, like, really true. I remember the first, so I'd been in contact actually with, asking BMW for a driver in DTM when it was the older DTM since 2011. Every year, just nagging, nothing until my first year in Carrera Cup in 2016. And then I got like a few more replies in 2017 when I started doing well. They were like, oh, you've made the transition to GTs. We see you want to take that route. Come and have a chat. So yeah. it took a while to get over there.
Yeah.
And now that you've, like I say, you've already ticked that mark. It's yeah. even if you say you go to F1 and you become multiple world champion, you've already got GT experience. So if you wanted to, after your F1 career, you just pop back, win a few yeah. more DTM races. Happy days. You know?
It's cool. Honestly, mate, it would work like that. Like yeah, you, could, you could be 15 years apart from DTM race wins, but yeah. they wouldn't, you know, they'd still say, oh yeah, well, you won a DTM race 15 years ago.
Yeah, you got GT experience.
Yeah,
it's mint.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. So yeah, I mean, you've absolutely got to focus on F1 though, but
yeah,
you know, I think me and Nick we've gone past that point, and Nick's obviously gone fully past that point and got a professional career. I'm in limbo at the moment, hopefully going to do the same.
Yeah,
but it's where I am now. It would be nice to have known that I would have done a DTM race like yourself and won a race like whilst I was in single seaters. Now I'm here, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you've got to focus on F1, absolutely. But it sounds like it's more for Red Bull than it is for obviously you or Alex, or
yeah,
I think even Nick Cassidy's doing it with you, isn't he?
Yeah, the it fills in for when Alex can't do it. So yeah, no, it is more of a obviously it's a great opportunity for me, but it is they obviously needed the drivers, and I realize now more than the start how big of a deal this is for Red Bull. They're putting a lot into this championship. It's a really big thing for them, so it's pretty cool that I get to be the guy, or me and Alex get to be the guys that are sort of filling that role.
I'm quite surprised in a way that they are. I mean, they've always kind of sponsored cars, I think, Nick, haven't they, in DTM? Where, like, I think Mateus Ekström comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously they've got a super strong connection because the chief who runs it is Berger, who has
yeah.
obviously got a huge,
yeah.
obviously, with Red yeah. Bull. So I'm sure there was a few calls made, and they needed yeah. at the time to really fill cars and seats and put drivers in seats at the time. So yeah, if you can call Red Bull and get them involved, it gets more hype around the championship yes. in general. And yeah. now they've got 19 or 20 cars even in year one after it being lastminute.com yeah. really. So I think plenty yeah. of people are looking at it. So
for sure. And like at the track, they had like this big Red Bull area for like all the where we go take your food and stuff like that. And then on the grid they had the Red Bull like this old like it's like this modded Vito Beetle thing that's like turned into an off-roader, and it's got like speakers and a DJ. So like before you get in the car, there's like everyone's just jamming out to this guy at the front of the grid. but it is, yeah, it is really, they are putting a lot into this. So yeah, as I said, it's pretty cool to be filling that role.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose at the end of the day, it's marketing for them.
Yeah.
Especially to the German market. DTM is quite big in Germany, I think.
Yeah.
But why? What, one question I do have though is why Ferrari?
Yeah, I was very surprised because we didn't know what the car was going to be at the start. So I knew I was going to be doing it, but I had no idea. We had no idea what car. And Ferrari was the last thing I thought that was going to be the car we'd be driving. I was thinking,
I've got a theory on this.
What's that?
Berger drove for Ferrari.
What, in F1?
Yeah, yep. He did.
Yeah.
So there's it's a connection true. There, bringing them both together.
Yeah.
Making a deal. That's I haven't heard anything that, but that's just my brain.
Honestly, I have no idea why. I actually don't know why. Yeah. And I think it sounds like when I was speaking with the team and stuff like that, they were all excited and surprised about the opportunity they were having to partner up as Red Bull and Ferrari. It is really cool. It's so different. It's weird, you know, because we have on the race weekend there's AF Corsa who are the team and run the car and stuff, but then there's lots of Ferrari guys. We even have a Ferrari truck that we spend a lot of time in working with the Ferrari guys. And it's like normally these guys are my enemies.
Yeah.
And I'm you know, working with them here. So it's quite cool.
Yeah, I think from the outside it looks a bit strange, to be honest. Like when Nick says that, I kind of see that happening. But it just seems a bit strange. Like, you know, it would be the same if you were running a Mercedes car. You'd think it was a bit weird. But I suppose they also probably look at it and go, what do they think is going to be best for the series with BOP and taking into account and things like that, I guess. How do you find to drive it, generally speaking, the Ferrari?
It's good. It's I was surprised by how it does move around quite a lot, and you can sort of wheel it, you know, you can get up on it, and it's not you know, it's not like a bus or anything like that, like, you know, people describe driving GTs as. It's quite good, and having the unrestricted power as well is, from what it sounds like compared to people who've drove with the restricted power, it's quite a lot better as well. It makes the car a lot better. The bit that I sort of don't like, or when I first drove the car, I used to just turn the traction off because I hated it. So I just drive in traction control one and never sort of leave it there. And then I sort of realized, you know, you need to have, and when you understand how, I was really surprised by how much they put into different traction settings, how the traction comes in and where it comes in and how strong it is, and the ABS, and how, like, there's so much that's just traction and ABS to help get speed out of the car. And you can, if you understand it, you can really fine tune that. Yeah, to drive, it's not bad. I just don't like the feeling of every time you hit the brake pedal, it's the pedal is like pushing back on your foot. And I don't know. I don't like the feeling so much of that. But otherwise, it's quite a good car. You can hit curbs, which is quite cool as well. Like something I've never really been able to do. But surprisingly, from what Alex says, you can't hit, F1 take more curb than what we do in places. It's crazy how F1 cars can just mow over curbs like it's nothing.
Yeah, their suspension in F1, having done a few tests, is just completely nuts. I always explain, like, driving F2s, like, you've got a Renault Clio Sport on solid springs going down the motorway, super loud and whatever. And then driving an F1 car is like having a BMW M8 cruising down the street, and it's just super fast, but really, really smooth. Good plug there, but that's like the like the difference. It's so smooth. You can take curbs, manipulate the car actually quite easily in comparison to say a GP2 or whatever. So he's got more experience than me than in an F1 car, but he's definitely
yeah, right, that's there. exactly what he says.
I think I actually remember I did in 2016 I did GP3, and then I did the last race in Hockenheim in Euro F3. And you know the entry curve of turn one in Hockenheim, you know, like, and you're F3, you're all over it, fully over it. The car's leaning into the corner a little bit, one wheel's higher than the other, and it's still flat. And you go there in GP3, you go near that and you spin,
that's very but true.
F3 is like the junior formula F1 car, like
it is, F3 car. It is really is such a good car, like, still my favorite car that I've driven since out of anything. It was a properly good car. And I mean, for example, Max being able to go from F3 to F1 shows that it's good enough preparation.
Yeah. In many ways, I wish the old Euro F3 car and the old World Series car was currently F3 and F2.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the best thing. And also driving style now, because Formula One is going to change quite dramatically, I think, for next year. But Formula One this year, and even more so last year, was so grippy. It was more like a 3.5 Renault from 2012, 2013, or like the F3 prior to what they are now, you know, on proper tyres, because they're just so flipping fast through the corner.
They were such good cars. I actually drove, when I was in New Zealand, my sponsor, Rodan Cars, I did a test, and I was comparing the FZ, which is what it's called, which is their Formula One car, compared to a 2010 GP2 car. And when I drove the GP2 car, like, the noise was just, I was like, as first time in like years that I've driven a car and it's just made me smile the whole time. Just like smiling, you know, as you're pulling gears. It was seriously cool.
Yeah, they did. They missed that now, the pure noise of it. Because, 3.5 in 2012 sounded mega. And then GP2 again was just before the new era, so 2015. Yeah. When you change gears, there's like this huge thud and noise from the back of it. And it's like, yeah, this is sick.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I only get to drive it on the sim, but even that feels pretty cool. maybe not next year's car quite as much as this year's car.
No, we'll have to see about all that, won't we?
Yeah, maybe they'll be faster. I mean, just before we quickly wrap up, mate, I want to touch on, how is it like back home with your sort of reputation, but you know, how are you perceived? Because I imagine you're quite fairly well known in a country like New Zealand, or am I just being a bit...
No, for sure. It's like... It's especially in the last 12 months, it's become a much bigger deal. Like before already, motorsport's big in New Zealand. But at least it used to be the main thing was VA supercars, because Australia was just across the ditch, you know, and they used to come to New Zealand every year. So the supercars event's always a big deal. And Formula One is almost so out of reach for a New Zealander that it's not as... Well, it wasn't as big, at least, but recently it's obviously becoming more and more realistic. And we had Brendan Hartley in there a couple of years ago. He sort of gave New Zealand hope again that you can still make it. So at home, I have it all the time. Like every week I have messages from friends like, "Saw you on the news, Liam," like stuff like that.
Just like that voice.
it's every time I go home, the support is crazy. I did I'm engineered engineered a TRS car in the TRS championship just gone. It was one of my mates driving, and I did like the first round as his his engineer, but I wasn't doing everything. But and just working on that weekend, it was a huge crowd coming to watch the race. And I swear I couldn't walk to get to the bathroom. It took me like half an hour just from the amount of people that were, it's crazy. Really, really cool though. Like to see the support. And the races, the F2 races are on Spark Sport in New Zealand. And I'm pretty sure last year they like made a separate section and named it like Awesome Lawson for all the F3 races. it's pretty cool.
It's quite surreal, I imagine.
Yeah, it is.
But
it is.
Sort of, you know, you grew up with these your friends as well, and now they're seeing you on TV and things like that.
Sometimes it's like sometimes I don't like it, because I'll talk to somebody I hadn't spoken to and I don't know, a year or something like that, one of my old friends, and I can see that they're talking to me differently, you know, they're nervous to talk to me, or that they're like, "Oh wow, Liam, look what you're doing and stuff," and it's just like, dude, just don't treat me any differently, please.
Imagine if you got to F1 and there was a New Zealand Grand Prix.
That would be literally, oh my god, it would be so cool. And we actually have we have the resources to do it. It'd be very hard, but it'd definitely be possible for sure. We have enough motorsport backing at home. We have two major tracks, about to be three now, owned by the same guy. His name's Tony Quinn, and he's put so much money into these two tracks. And two of them are on the TRS calendar. I've raced on both of them, and the facilities at the track are seriously like world class. Like, they have apartments and stuff like that around the circuit where people live, and they just have their cars and they just take it on for track days and stuff like that. The track is just the whole place is seriously like really, really it had a lot of money put into it. So I would say it's possible, and I hope that one day it would be achievable.
I'd like to see it.
Have you guys been to New Zealand or
not been to Australia or anywhere near that side of the world?
You should definitely go.
Said if I race Bathurst, because I was due to race Bathurst 12-hour last year, but unfortunately one of the cars got stuck in South Africa from the year before. So and that was the car I was supposed to drive. Didn't get to go and do it, but hopefully next year I can do Bathurst. And if I go, I said, I'm going to try and go over to New Zealand whilst I'm that way, because obviously it's not just a short trip in terms of flying over there. So
When you were saying about jet lag before, I was thinking serious, like when I fly home at the moment, especially with COVID, it's like a 30-hour journey sometimes more, like with the flights. It's so long, and the time difference right now, I mean, what's the time? It's 8:54 p.m. here. It's 7:54 a.m. in New Zealand. It's like 12 hours. It's 11 hours. So when I go home, I am like wide awake all night for like 2 weeks, just trying to get over that jet lag.
God, I can't imagine that, actually. I imagine part of the thing stumbling block would be the fact that there's an Australian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But I mean, me personally, I'd like to see both.
Yeah,
I mean, there's clearly something in the water down there between you lot in New Zealand and Australia, because there's a lot of you that seem to be performing at the highest level.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, and from Australia as well, but from New Zealand, we definitely, in all sports, really, I think we punch above our weight quite a bit, which is quite cool. But I think it's also because there's very few Kiwis that are successful, but the ones that are overseas are normally successful. I think it's because there's so few of them. So the ones that are there are just like the good ones, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
Because it's so hard to get out of New Zealand. Like, the amount of times I've been told from when I was younger, I won't name the guy, but when I won the Speed Sport Scholarship, which was to do this Formula First championship for the year, it was a $20,000 New Zealand dollar, so about £10,000. Scholarship to race a season in Formula First, and I was doing it, and it already, you know, then my dream was Formula One, and I was saying that, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And by somebody who is very, very highly rated New Zealand and is very successful New Zealand racing driver, told me that it's not possible and don't bother, just don't even try. And the amount of times I've been told this from just being from New Zealand is crazy. I'm sure probably Marcus has had the same thing as well. It just always seems so unachievable.
Well, it's, it always seems so unachievable until it's done.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're showing them, so yeah, nice one.
Hopefully, yeah, exactly. Hopefully we can seal the deal, but it's still, even though it's weird, because even though it's, you know, F2, which is effectively the step below, it still feels very, very far away.
Yeah,
sure, but you're in the best position. I mean, with Red Bull, it's shown year upon year, if you can get the results, which you are clearly doing, both now in DTM, which is not exactly where you want to be quite now, but it's still good to be doing well and performing, and it shows you're very adaptable, so they'll be happy about that. But then if you perform in F2, for sure you'll get a test. I'm sure you'll do the job there, because from experience, I found driving an F1 car actually a bit easier. Because you've got so many switches that you can, I've got oversteer, okay, well, lock the diff in sector 3 in Barcelona, all that kind of things. And the amount of information you can relay back to the engineers to get in the window is so, so good. So you'll jump in and get used to the speed and be rapid straight away. So at least you're in the right position to, you know, get the results and then make that step up.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Well, you'll have to do that. Get into F1, win races, maybe a world championship, and then you'll come on back.
And
on
not
the
forget who we are, you know.
Yeah, no way.
You'll come back on the podcast, mate, and then we'll just be away and gone then.
That's one thing though that frustrates me so much. And even, I mean, Jay, you'll know it already, but at our level there and below, even, like, there's people that are already so arrogant as racing drivers, like I just feel like they're above everybody. And that is one thing that when I talk to these people and they talk to me like that, I just never want to come across like that at all.
No need to be. I don't see why you've got to be confident, but I don't see why you have to put an act on.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, from recent experience, I was in the sim with Vettel 2 or 3 weeks ago or something like that. And it was literally like talking to someone I'd raced go-karts in. He was
really
so down to earth, so good to asking my opinions on things. And I was like, almost a bit like, hang on, mate, you're the 4-time world champion. You just tell me what you want and I'll help if I can, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But also, he was so open. Yeah, anything. He said, sorry. But he was so open, so down to earth, you know. And after Baku, I know he was at Aston having a beer with the boys and went and showed the trophy. And that's really what everyone should be like. If you're up your own ass, then you've clearly got an ego problem, and it's just not the way forward.
No, I think that's why he probably didn't get on a Ferrari.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Don't know enough about it.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there.
Don't ruin your chances with Ferrari, mate. Come on.
Can we edit that bit out? No, we'll leave it there, mate, before I get myself in trouble. Yeah, pleasure, mate. Thanks to you for coming on as well.
Really
appreciate it, making time for us as well. I'm sure everybody listening does as well.
No worries, mate.
Thanks for coming on. If you want to give Liam a follow, you probably, to be honest, if you listen to this, you already follow him, let's be honest. But if you do, if you don't and you do, it's Liam Lawson 30 on Instagram. Please leave a like, subscribe, comment, tell your mom, your dad, your nan, your dog's aunties, cats, about the channel, about the podcast. We've got some cool stuff coming up. I think we might have some stuff with Nick on board soon enough.
Yeah, fingers crossed we'll be getting that out soon. Working on being able to release some video content which people should enjoy, so yeah, fingers crossed we can get that out soon.
Yeah, that'll be good. But yeah, thanks for listening, guys, and yeah, we'll see you again next week. Cheers.